The spotlight is now on the federal government's inspector general community. Coverage in the news media is not common for IGs in government, nor is a chance to learn more about how they do their jobs. Brian Miller, former inspector general at the General Services Administration, now managing director at Navigant, and Calvin Scovell, the inspector general at the Transportation Department, my guests today to take you inside the inspector general world. Brian, it's terrific to have you back in the studio. Thank you for being here today.
It's great to be here, Francis.
And
thank you.
Cal, it's great to meet you, and thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Francis.
Tell me about your agency's, your organization's mission inside transportation and what you're doing for the agency, please.
Yeah, thanks. Francis, our overarching mission is to assist the department in achieving a safe and efficient and effective transportation system. Those are the department's statutory priorities, and we align our priorities with the department in accordance with those. Any additional set of priorities that may come to us from the Hill.
You think there's a misconception about people thinking about IGs that somehow that your mission is at odds with the mission of the agency? Because it makes perfect sense. You and the leadership of the agency as a whole should have the same goal, I would think.
We should have the same goal. But I think where some of the misconception may spring from is the idea that some IGs may be simply out there to play the gotcha game.
Mm-hmm.
Or, on the other hand, that some IGs may mistake their proper role, what I would think of their proper role, where their lane should be,
mm-hmm.
and really undertake to substitute their policy determinations for those of the Congress or the administration. In other words, to put themselves in the role of the decision maker instead of one who is supplying data or information to properly inform the decision. And that's where we and our office constantly strive to be, is in the latter role.
As I have talked to Brian, and if I've gotten to talk to other inspectors general from around government, that provision of data is within the mission that you provide seems to me to be, if not the most important function that you serve, one of the most important functions. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, one thing that I quickly learned when I came to DOT is that this town is never short of opinions and never short of advocates. Sometimes short of, though, are facts and data.
Mm-hmm.
So between the OIGs and the Government Accountability Office, we try to be the truth tellers. Supply the information to the decision makers, let them do with it what they wish.
Now, you mentioned the gotcha game. Do you believe it's necessary to demonstrate that in each investigation, or do you believe that an IG, and not necessarily just a transportation, but do you believe that an IG over a period of time can build sufficient currency and goodwill that no longer becomes necessary?
Ideally, yes. And if I can take a moment, Francis, when you use the term investigation, to us in the IG world, at least in my little piece of that world, that connotes a criminal investigation.
Okay.
You may have intended to use what we would call a term that we would call an audit or a program review.
Okay, yes.
And that's where we will go into a department program essentially and dissect it, trying to find out what works, what doesn't. As I tell my folks, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We always want to take pains to give credit where credit is due on the part of the department and the program officials. But where we identify deficiencies or vulnerabilities, we want to highlight those as well and apply our best minds to recommendations for improvement.
Thank you for that correction. And maybe that's a place to pull back and talk about the terminology, because I wonder if there are other terms that people use, in my case, innocently, mm-hmm. but not correctly, that apply to the work that you and your colleagues do.
Well, audit versus investigation is the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
We hear that all the time, even over on the Hill. I've testified now 70 plus times in my 7.5 years as IG, and oftentimes in the course of a hearing, a member will talk about the IG investigation under review when actually it was an audit.
Mm-hmm.
In our world at transportation, the investigators and criminal special agents are there to protect the taxpayer dollar primarily, as well as to ensure transportation safety. Those are the key emphasis.
If I could jump in here, Francis, I often had people confusing audits and investigations. In fact, I talked to one group and they said, well, we didn't get an entrance interview for our audit.
Mm-hmm.
Your auditors came and sat down and asked us questions, and they didn't give us an any kind of parameter of what the audit would be. And I said, well, that may have been an investigation. And and I asked, well, did they carry guns? Well, yes, they did. That, uh-huh. that was an investigation. That was not an audit. And the protocols are entirely different. You know, with an audit, you have an entrance interview and an exit interview, and there are different ways that we go about it. But mm-hmm. Cal, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your two main offices.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. We're organized in similar fashion to most OIGs across the federal government, at least, in that we have an Office of Auditing and Evaluation. And in our world, we undertake not only financial statement audits to find out where the dollars are going, but we also look at DOT programs mm-hmm. to find out where they're doing well and where they're doing less than well and how we might recommend improvements. Mm-hmm. We also have an Office of Investigations. We have 140, 150 total across the country, both headquarters and 9 field offices. And those are the folks who, as Brian described, they'll carry a weapon, they have a badge, they have full law enforcement authority, they can make arrests, and do, if we have occasion this afternoon, perhaps I can talk about a case that we made, an arrest that we made.
Please.
Just a short while ago.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. This is one that is important, we think, on a number of different fronts. It concerned the number 2 official in the Federal Highway Administration. That's one of the components in the Department of Transportation. Federal Highways essentially oversees highways, bridges, and tunnels. And every state has its own Federal Highway Administration office. This was the number 2 official in the New Jersey Federal Highway Administration office. He was arrested by DOT OIG agents on July 23rd, 2014. In his office, he was taken to U.S. District Court in Newark, New Jersey, and he was charged with making false statements and mail fraud. The essence of the case was that he's accused of using a straw company to obtain Federal Highway Administration grant funds whose disposition he oversaw as a public official.
He was doing business with himself.
He was, essentially, yeah. It, of course, represents a loss to proper use of those funds, mm-hmm. but even more importantly, and in the eyes of the Department of Justice, and it was the U.S. attorney whose agents, who my agents were supporting in this role, that's what really got their attention.
Cal Scovel is the Inspector General at the Transportation Department. Brian Miller, the former IG at the General Services Administration, is here today to join in the conversation. Not specifically about that case. I understand you can't go into detail about any particular case. But in general, where do you learn the most about things that you need to take a look at within DOT?
We get a couple of different angles. I would say we get a number of very high quality referrals from DOT officials themselves. And these are highway or transit or FAA officials across the country who know of our capabilities. They see us as the department's sole law enforcement arm, if you will. And when they have suspicions, they will often ask us to roll in and assist them in getting to the bottom of it. We prize those relationships. We also get a number of referrals from sometimes disgruntled employees of companies who have DOT contracts or who have received grants, federal money from DOT. And sometimes they're in it for what may be a share of any recovery under a system that's called the QTAM system. Sometimes it's simply because they're good citizens and they want to do the right thing. We also operate a very robust hotline, and we get a number of key referrals from that as well. Our hotline is a little bit different from some other OIGs in that because the Department of Transportation has such a keen interest in transportation safety, we have to be prepared to receive safety-related hotline complaints 24/7. And so we have contracted with an outfit that helps us do that, mm-hmm. And we have arranged with them protocols so that they will instantly refer to us anything that we have instructed them rises to given levels, and we make the instant referrals to, oftentimes it's the FAA where those are the most pressing concerns.
Brian, Cal mentioned the key relationships with leaders at the agency. How do the successful IGs cultivate those relationships to make sure that there is sufficient level of trust, but not an overdone level of comfort so that you know that a proper distance is going to be maintained, but the trust level still exists?
Well, you know, it's difficult to maintain that level of trust and that right relationship. You always have to pay attention to it. The way I did it was I tried to meet with officials, and I had my staff, my senior staff, working with high-level officials throughout the department, throughout GSA. And I think that's key. I think if you have your staff working with the staff of the agency, they see you do your job. They see what you have to do. They get used to your approach. They get to know you. You get to know them. And there's a level of trust that is produced by that.
Do you detect a difference in the in how that dynamic works when you have a politically appointed IG versus a career IG or a termed IG? And then on the other end of that, the relationship with the political appointees as opposed to the high-level career staff. How does all that fit together in kind of a brew?
Well, it is kind of a mix. Yeah. Because you have people that have gotten to the agency through various means, as you pointed out, and some people who have been there a lot longer, know how the agency operates, know the programs, and you have people who are brand new. And you just have to pay attention and know these people and know where they're at in their career and whether they're political, whether they're career, what their objectives are, how best you can work with them, and how best you can do your job as an inspector general or an employee of an inspector general.
Yeah, Cal, you were kind of nodding your head as Brian was expressing his thoughts there. Any thoughts that you want to share on that?
Yes, thanks. And I think Brian is spot on in the points that he made. I have a number of ways to express it to our senior officials when they first come into the department. And one saying that I'll sometimes use with them is one that a congressman used with me at one of my very first hearings. He said, "Mr. Scovel, you're the committee's hired skeptic." Mm-hmm. So we want to hear what's going right, but feel free to say yes, but anytime. Mm-hmm. And in trying to fulfill that expectation to keep both, and this is our obligation under law, to keep both the Congress and the Secretary fully and currently informed, I try to say no surprises. Like Brian, I meet with either the Secretary or the Deputy Secretary one-on-one at least every 2 weeks and in a group setting nearly every single week. And it's not just to cover OIG business in the group setting, but it's a rundown of all the department priorities.
Carol, what are some of the high-profile cases that you and your team have worked on in the last, say, 2 years or so? There are a number of them that have made not just headlines in the federal community and in the IG community, but in the broader media.
Sure. Thanks, Francis, because one thing, whether we're talking about DOT OIG auditors or special agents, they thrive on impact. And I have a couple of examples that I'd be happy to pitch to you. One, most notably, came up in March when Attorney General Eric Holder held a press conference where he announced a settlement agreement with Toyota Motor Corporation. Mm-hmm. The investigation into those matters was conducted by the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, as well as a number of special agents from my office, Dennis Ocampo, and Brian Smith were instrumental from my office in helping that investigation. Everyone, I think, will recall several years back when Toyota had a problem with unintended acceleration. And our investigation disclosed that Toyota had deceived consumers and the safety agency within DOT by claiming that it had addressed the root cause of unintended acceleration through a limited safety recall of 8 models for what they called floor mat entrapment. Which was a dangerous condition in which an improperly secured all-weather floor mat can trap a depressed gas pedal. At the time those statements were being made, however, Toyota knew that it had not recalled some cars with design features that made them just as susceptible to floor mat entrapment as some of the recalled cars. And second, only weeks before those statements were made by the company, Toyota had taken steps to hide from DOT another type of unintended acceleration in its vehicles, separate and apart from the floor mat problem. And this one had to do with accelerators getting stuck at a partially depressed level known as sticky pedal in the industry. The upshot of it all was that the Attorney General on March 19th announced a deferred prosecution agreement under which Toyota agreed to pay $1.2 billion in a financial penalty. It's the largest penalty of its kind ever imposed on an automotive company, as well as to accept an independent monitor whose function would be to review and assess the policies and procedures related to Toyota's safety-related public statements and reporting obligations to the Department of Transportation. So it was a very significant case, and one which, of course, had the attention of all car makers.
Yes, I imagine
including now GM.
Uh-huh.
And we have a work underway in GM, too, now on the audit side.
That's on the ignition switches issue?
Yes, exactly. Ignition switches, fatalities as well, sadly. But the Secretary of Transportation, Mr. Fox, asked our office to take apart where the safety agency within the department had handled the GM problem through the years and to make recommendations as to improvements. So we had had some experience along those lines because Secretary LaHood, in connection with Toyota, had asked us to do a similar undertaking with Toyota. We did that. Now we want to go back and see where the successes and failures may lie with regard to GM.
My notes say that you have been involved in the recent opening of the Silver Line, the new Metro line.
Well, sort of. Right.
At least keeping an eye on what's going on.
Yes.
Tell me about your involvement there.
Yeah, we've had several ways in which we've been involved. One directly and one more tangentially, but all our listeners know about the Silver Line and the importance that it is to the metro system in Northern Virginia. What they may not know is that a couple of years ago, we issued a report on the Federal Transit Administration's oversight of phase one of the Silver Line. This is the line. This is what just opened out to Wheelie Avenue. We initiated that because we had a report from an employee of a private company who related to us his concerns about the safety of using 11 pre-existing concrete pier foundations to support the elevated part of the Silver Line's guideway. Our audit found out that FTA had implemented an oversight process to ensure that tests were being made on these 30-year-old concrete pier foundations, but the testing process had not provided assurance that the structures would meet the required 50-year service life.
Mm-hmm.
And the agency and the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, who had received responsibility for building the Silver Line, was prepared to put the line right over these pre-existing concrete foundations without having solid safety assurances. In response to our audit, both MWA and FTA did the right thing. They undertook a much more extensive safety review. They performed all the recommended testing that our auditors and we have a little cell of civil engineers in our office as well, who advised us on this project. But they did all the analysis and determinations and determined that the old piers, in fact, would meet their service life requirements. So I want to assure your listeners that those are safe at this point, as determined by MWA and FTA.
As Cal talks about all of the resources that he has at his disposal, it makes me think, Brian, that the questions that you're asked to look at, the issues that inspectors general are asked to look at, are so broad as to encompass almost any potential resource that might be needed. He's got engineers at his disposal. I know you had all kinds of terrific minds at your disposal at the General Services Administration. What are some areas of expertise, some areas of talent that IGs draw on, maybe on a regular basis, that somebody might not think, well, they've got those or they have access to those kinds of people?
Well, in the past, we had more resources. So we would have engineers or architects and engineers on staff. But now we have to contract with them, at least at GSA, when we would do an audit that would require some sort of analysis of architecture or engineering, or we'd rely on GSA to do it, the Public Building Service. Cal has engineers on staff. The other area would be economists mm-hmm. in measuring loss. Often we're asked to measure loss to the government. And so in those instances, we no longer have economists on staff. At one point we did. And now we'd have to contract out for that expertise.
It strikes me that there's a benefit to having those people on staff and having them well-versed in the operations, at least of the agency, if not the broader federal government, rather than going out and buying that expertise in the general marketplace and hoping that you can find somebody that's specialized enough to be able to speak to the particular issues your agency's working on.
Well, that would be helpful, but it may be a bit of a luxury. We were asked once to do an analysis of a federal building to analyze the environmental risks to the building. And I had to go back to the senator and congressional delegation and say, no, we don't do that. We don't have that expertise. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, we'll audit how the agency managed those risks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you find yourself, or have you found yourself in that situation where somebody asks you to produce something, Cal, and you say, here's what I can give you, here's the information I can provide, and it's a little different than maybe what you asked for?
Sure. And in fact, it happens quite frequently. Mm-hmm. 60% of our audit work is generated by congressional requests or legislative mandates, mm-hmm. Which is a very high percentage. But oftentimes we'll be asked questions by members or staff from the Hill, and we'll have to, whether negotiate is the right word or educate or inform or request, mm-hmm. that we receive a somewhat different assignment from them. Because we want to stay in our lane, we want to stay where we can assist the decision makers, and we know there's no quicker way to get in over our heads than to go to areas where we don't have the expertise and where we may not have the funding resources in order to be able to contract mm-hmm. for them, as Brian described. We are lucky in my office that we have three civil engineers. We have several economists that we've been able to keep on. We have some very well-trained and aggressive cybersecurity experts, and our criminal computer crimes unit in the investigation section mm-hmm. is well respected across the entire OIG community. So we've taken pains to protect those capabilities, and we hope to be able to do that going forward.
We're just about out of time, and I'm grateful for your time today. I really enjoyed this conversation. I personally hate the term watchdog, but I imagine you hear it a lot. Who watches you as you watch the agency? What are the performance standards or performance measures that you use to verify that you're doing the best that you can to provide this data to whoever you're providing it to?
Yeah, I've been. Thanks, Francis, because it's an important question. I consider myself and all of our efforts to be under very close scrutiny, first of all, by our own staff. And because they are sworn, whether they're law enforcement agents or auditors, to their own professional standards, they hold us to those highest standards. We look to some measures of success or effectiveness, if you will, in the external sense, using some traditional OIG measures of indictments and convictions and dollar recoveries. Return on investment, ours in fiscal year 2013 was $41 for each dollar that we expended on the part of the government. So that's an exceedingly high return on investment. We're doing great. All of the congressional work, I know, is coming to us because the Congress respects our work. The Secretary is asking us to do things for him, too. Internally, I want to make sure that our staff know that we put them first and keep them always, because they are our keys to mission effectiveness. So the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey and our own internal surveys have been key for us in understanding what concerns they have and how we can improve our own practices, and especially our leadership at OIG, which has been a key focus of mine.